Questioning Paul Volume 1, The Great Galatians Debate Chapter 11 Part 1 Props, An Appropriate Response.
How are you going to respond? The longer the sentence, the more challenging it can be to comprehend. That is especially true with Paul. So, as we begin our review of the sixth chapter of his thesis on rebuttal to the Galatians, consider this rendition of his next pronouncement as it is rendered in the Nestle-Aland 27th edition MCREYNOLDS Interlinear.
Brothers, if also might be taken before man and some trespass you the spiritual ones put in order the such in spirit of gentleness looking carefully yourself not also you might be pressured.
It is almost as if Paul cleverly selected 23 words and strung them together as a puzzle to tantalize his fellow Gnostics. While I am not exactly sure what this is supposed to mean, I know that it does not contribute to knowing Yahweh or to our understanding of his covenant. And therefore, the following exercise in linguistics is for naught.
And also, brothers, if a man may have previously detected or caught someone in a false step, you all, the spiritual ones, you must be prepared to completely restore the one such as this with a meek and gentle spirit, carefully observing yourself, so then you, yourself, may submit and be tempted. Galatians 6 verse 1.
Ever the paranoid hypocrite, Paul knew that he had been caught lying to the Galatians. And yet unlike his response to Shimon Cephas, he wanted those he deliberately deceived to cut him a break. But since he has told us that he cannot lie, he couched his message in a generic instruction, one that everyone in his original audience would have seen right through. There are so many things wrong with Shaul's last proclamation, with an eye to exposing errant Christian theology, let's tackle these one word at a time. The problems begin with prolabano, may have previously detected or caught. This is very similar to the Quran asking Muslim children to spy on their parents and turn them into the authorities if they suspect them of rejecting any of Muhammad's commands. It was how most everyone in Stalin's Russia and Hitler's Germany were controlled. It was the spirit behind the Salem witch trials in America. And it is how professors, politicians, priests, preachers, and media spokespeople are compelled to walk a conforming path today. It is the operating mechanism behind political correctness. It is the spirit behind. We are watching you, and if you step out of line, remember Stoic Omen, march in a conforming line following the leader, we will send you off to be reprogrammed. It is why the National Security Agency is spying on the phone calls and internet clicks of ordinary Americans. Moving from Paul's police to the paradramati, false step. We discover that in the Pauline faith deviations from Pauline doctrine would not be tolerated. No one will be allowed to slip away or turn aside from the path, which has been articulated by the self-proclaimed messenger of God. It is especially telling that paradramati is a compound of para, meaning from, and picto, to descend, being thrust down, prostrating oneself. Paul is establishing a religion, which like this letter, will not tolerate a rival, nor any challenge to his authority or instructions. All those who rebel and offer dissenting views must be caught and thoroughly dealt with. Welcome to the impetus behind the Inquisition. By the way, Yahusha encouraged us to carefully examine the rhetoric and platitudes of religious and political leaders, but not ordinary people. And his standard for this review was anything that deviated from his instructions in the Torah and prophets. As a result, if we were to follow Yahusha's advice and example, we would all be holding Shaul accountable for his deliberate deviations from the Word of God. Prior to examining this passage, I had wondered how noumenikoi, being spiritual and acting spiritually, became synonymous with the Christian religion. But now I realize as do you that the concept was sponsored by Shaul. And unfortunately, like faith and belief, it has given rise to a host of erroneous concepts and errant behaviors. God never asks anyone to be spiritual, because the most active spirit on this planet is Satan's. Instead, the standard God wants us to observe is the Torah, which is why the example we are encouraged to follow is Yahusha, the Word made flesh. Christians demonstrate what it means to act spiritual, When they wave their arms in the air at praise services, and when they point to the heavens after achieving some success in an athletic event. Spirituality is on display when someone, ignorant of the purpose of free will, says God has a plan for your life, or says it was all part of God's plan, in an ill-advised attempt to blame their misfortune on God, suggesting that their failures were His will. Spirituality is manifest again at funerals when someone claims that a deceased friend was called home. Worse, Christians think that they are demonstrating their spirituality when they insist others do what Jesus Christ did, not recognizing that the Christian caricature they worship was crafted by Paul, and thus is unrelated to God. Also interesting in this regard, this is one of the few Greek passages where a form of pneuma was actually written out, as opposed to being represented by a divine placeholder for ruach, as it is the second time in this sentence. The only thing which distinguishes pneumatikoi from pneuma is the tikoi suffix. Tikto means to bring forth, to bear, and to produce. It is used in the context of the woman giving birth. If it were not for the fact that katartizo, you must be prepared to completely restore, was written in the second person plural as katartizit, then it would have been a worthy instruction. But this is not our job. It's the Kodesh slash set apart Ruach slash Spirit's responsibility to repair and renew our souls, making us totally complete and entirely sound. Worse, katartizit was written as an active imperative, and thus as a command, or commandment, that the subject of this order must perform at the insistence of Paul. Both times we have encountered prates, I have translated it in accord with the primary definitions found in most every lexicon. Gentile, meek, and timid. And that is because the favored meanings, while wildly hypocritical, fit Paul's presentation of Gnostic attributes. However, the secondary connotation is consideration. Therefore, prates, an appropriate and considered response, is what questioning Paul was written to inspire. You have been encouraged to carefully evaluate the evidence and then respond appropriately. With regard to prates, Aristotle said that the word stood in the middle between getting angry without reason and not getting angry at all. Prates describes a measured and considered reaction which is suitable to the circumstance. It isn't passivity or aggression, but instead the fitting reply based upon adequate knowledge and proper understanding. Prates is most often rendered meekness or humility, but the word does not suggest weakness, being impotent, or being lowly or impoverished, because all of that misses the point. Prates is the courage and character to do what is right regardless of the consequence. It was used by Yahusha in the Sermon on the Mount to describe those who understand the appropriateness of relying upon Yahweh as opposed to themselves. Therefore, prates isn't about meekness as we use that word, but instead about understanding the human condition relative to Yahweh's word, and then engaging appropriately. The merit of prates is that it encourages us to consider the evidence thoughtfully before we respond. It is an informed and rational reply. So, now that you know that Shaul's message is the antithesis of Yahweh's, who are you going to trust? The key, or course, to making the right decision is focus. We must scopio, carefully observe, be concerned and think about, Yahweh's word. But unfortunately Paul told Christians to scopiosiaton, focus upon, carefully observe, and think about yourself. The reason Shaul wants Christians to be self-aware, guarded, and circumspect is so that uprazo, you, yourself, may not be tracked by trying to catch a mistake another has made. His message, therefore, counts both ways. He wants his spies to toe the line he has drawn, so that they aren't tempted to reject his dogma. And he is equally insistent that they don't test his instruction so as to ascertain the truth for themselves. Prazo is from pra, to conduct a trial. But it also means to know by way of personal experience. It is often translated to put to the test, to examine, or to prove. But keep in mind, while these concepts are appropriate when it comes to evaluating a message or messenger, prazo written in the second person singular, you, was coupled with you, yourself, in this text which negated all of these things. Without the clutter of the Greek, and without excessive amplification, the opening verse of the sixth chapter reads,
And also brothers, if a man may have previously detected or caught someone in a false step, you all, the spiritual ones, you must thoroughly prepare and completely restore the one such as this with a meek and gentle spirit, carefully observing yourself so then you, yourself, may submit and be tempted, having tried to catch a mistake. Galatians 6 verse 1.
In the Latin Vulgate, Jerome placed the trail all others have followed.
Brethren, and if a man be overtaken in any fault, you, who are spiritual, instruct such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering to self, lest thou also be tempted.
Based upon this interpretation, the King James Bible, as a translation of the Latin, and not the Greek, reads,
Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted.
Moving into the more modern translations, the literal New American Standard Bible scribed,
Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted.
In spite of the fact that there is no reference to sisters, believers, or godly, in the entire epistle, much less in this verse, the New Living Translation authored,
Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help the person back onto the right path, and be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself.
In other words, adhere to church doctrine and don't you dare think for yourself. After that romp into the realm of religion, we encounter this pearl of fluidity. In it, Paul introduces yet a third Torah. We've had Sarah's promised liberation from the Torah, Hagar's enslavement to the Torah, and now the Torah of Christ. And yet, like Yahweh and his covenant, there is only one Torah. But beyond a trinity of Torahs, the preamble to the myth may be even worse than its conclusion.
Of one another, the weighty burdens you carry, remove, and endure, and this in this way you all complete the Torah of the Christ. Galatians 6 verse 2.
Yahusha and the Torah are one, wholly inseparable. The former cannot be known, appreciated, understood, or capitalized upon without the latter. Yahusha is the corporeal manifestation of the Word of God, the Word made flesh. But since Paul has condemned the Torah transcribed by Moses on Mount Sinai, it's obvious that his mythical Torah of Christ is an imaginary replacement crafted to fit his faith. And speaking of fantasies, the notion that ordinary people complete and fulfill the Torah is only possible in Paul's religious realm. But in the world Yahweh created, he alone fulfills and completes his word, and he does it his way and on his schedule. No man bastazo, endures or carries, removes or bears, the barrows, burdens, of others. We cannot remove our own burdens, much less someone else's. This is God's job. He alone is qualified. And this makes every aspect of Paul's instruction fraudulent. Frankly, since Yahusha endured pain and separation beyond imagination to fulfill the Torah on Passover and unleavened bread explicitly to remove and bear our burdens, Paul asking others to perform this same job is presumptuous and insulting. It is telling to note that rabbis like Shaul were told to avoid reading Yeshayahu/Isaiah 53, so Shaul would never have considered its message while studying to be a Pharisee. And yet it affirms the Messiah's role and our redemption. Please consider.
Surely our sickness and maladies he, himself, lifted from us, accepted, and more, and our pain he carried away. Isaiah 53 verse 4, All of us like sheep have gone astray. Mankind has turned to his own way. But Yahweh has caused the guilt and punishment of us all to fall on him. Isaiah 53 verse 6.
This next statement speaks of Yahusha's soul enduring GL on our behalf on the invitation to be called out and meet with God on unyeasted bread.
When, as a concession, he shall render his soul as a guilt offering for sin. He will be numbered with those who rebel, himself lifting up and bearing the crimes and penalties of many, and he will intercede for those who are in rebellion, out for joy. Isaiah 53 verses 10 to 12, 54 verse 1.
The contrast between Yahweh's word and Paul's drivel is monumental. It is the difference between God and man. So why is it that billions believe Shaul? The Nestle Allen MCREYNOLDS Interlinear published.
Of one another the burdens bear, and thusly you will fill up the law of the Christ.
It is what Jerome wrote in the Vulgate as well.
Bear you in another's burdens, and so you shall fulfill the law of Christ.
So, we should not be surprised to see this repeated in the KJV.
Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ.
Good luck with that. Recognizing the hubris and pain associated with even pretending to do what the Messiah had done, the NLT arbitrarily changed complete to obey.
Share each other's burdens, and in this way obey the law of Christ.
But that would require observing the Torah. Having digressed from utter nonsense to utterly wrong over the course of two sentences, let's approach the third with a touch of skepticism. Therefore, in our quest for accuracy, please note that we find if indeed, in Papyrus 46 in place of the Nestle Allen's Aigar, because if, at the beginning of the next sentence.
Since if someone supposes and presumes to be somebody he is nothing, he deceives himself. Galatians 6 verse 3.
Paul should have worn this as a sign around his neck. He claimed to be God's exclusive apostle to the world, deceiving all who believed him. He wrote this for the same reason that he used OK previously in this letter, besmirching the authority Yahusha vested in the disciples Shimon, Jacob, and Yahochanan. He viewed those God chosen trained as rivals and as a threat. And from this reprisal, this new statement indicts Shaul. It affirms that he was fully aware of the derogatory implications of Doke, supposes and presumes, when he wielded it against the disciples in order to demean their status. So, since Shaul seems to know what the word meant here, he knew what it meant there. Remember Galatians 2 verse 9.
And having recognized, becoming familiar with the grace of the one having been given to me, Jacob, Cephas, and also Yahochanan, the ones presently presumed and supposed to be leaders, the right place of honor and authority they granted to me, and to Barnabas' fellowship as a result, we to the nations and ethnicities, but they to the circumcision.
Therefore, those who would cut Paul a break there cannot use the word correctly here without foregoing their integrity. As for the established translations, we find this in the NAMI.
If for things some to be some nothing being he deceives mind himself.
From this, Jerome wrote,
for if any man think himself to be something, whereas he is nothing, he deceiveth himself.
Once again demonstrating that the KJV was a translation of the Latin Vulgate, not the Greek text, we find,
for if a man think himself to be something, when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself.
Writing their own Bible, the NLT scribed,
if you think you are too important to help someone, you are only fooling yourself. You are not that important.
After incriminating himself, the devil's advocate boasts,
but the work of himself he must examine each, and then to himself alone the boast and brag that person will possess and hold, and not to the other. Galatians 6 verse 4.
Playing with the pieces of the same puzzle, the NAMI assembled,
the but work of himself let approve each, and then in himself alone the brag he will have, and not in the other.
The LV proposed,
but let everyone prove his own work, and so he shall have glory in himself only and not in another.
Parroting Jerome, the KJV said,
but let every man prove his own work, And then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone, and not in another?
Smoothed out and streamlined a bit, my interpretation of Paul's last two combined statements are quite similar to the translations, even though we would view the implications very differently.
Indeed, if someone supposes and presumes to be somebody, he is nothing. He deceives himself. Galatians 6 verse 3, but the work, performances, and accomplishments of himself, he must examine and prove meritorious, and then to himself, alone, at the exclusion of all others, the boast and brag, the justification for pride and praise, the exaltation and glory that person will possess and experience, and not for any other. Galatians 6 verse 4.
So, if this is what Paul meant to say, and it probably is, then we have to question his mental stability. The last two verses are at cross purposes with each other. One says that if someone presumes that they are important, then they are deceiving themselves. But then he says that we should examine everything we have done so that we can boast and glorify ourselves. Beyond the duplicity, there is an additional problem. We shouldn't be about the business of boasting in what we have done. We aren't to glorify or exalt ourselves. Our mission should never be about us, especially to the exclusion of others. Our words and deeds should be focused on encouraging people to consider Yahweh's words and deeds. And yet, knowing Paul, the first of these two statements was designed to impugn his rivals, Yahusha's disciples, and the second was postured for Paul's benefit. He is trying to justify boasting, claiming that if you consider the scope of his work that he is worthy of exaltation. Recognizing this problem, the NLT simply changed the text to keep Paul from looking like an egomaniacal lunatic who had just contradicted himself.
Pay careful attention to your own work, for then you will get the satisfaction of a job well done, and you won't need to compare yourself to anyone else.
Speaking of hallucinogenic schizophrenia, after telling his audience that they should remove and bear other people's burdens, as if they were, themselves, fulfilling the Torah, Shaul says that everyone will carry their own load. Some would call that an internal contradiction.
For each and every one their own individual and distinct burden will carry and bear. Galatians 6 verse 5.
In the real world, Yahweh has already removed the burdens of all those who have engaged in his covenant. But to know that, you'd have to read his Torah. Beyond the fact that Paul has contradicted himself regarding a command he has just issued, and beyond the fact that this negates Yahusha's fulfillment of unleavened bread, bastaza was rendered in the future tense in the indicative mood, making it a reality from the writer's perspective. That means that Paul is saying that they will actually continue to bear and endure their burdens into the future. In other words, there won't be any forgiveness. And unfortunately, for those who believe Paul, there will not be any. These translations are an accurate reflection of Shorwell's errors. Nami.
Each for the own pack will bear.
LV.
For everyone shall bear his own burden.
KJV.
For every man shall bear his own burden.
But in league with those who benefit financially from Christianity, and therefore willing to alter the words which were written in Galatians to make Paul appear credible, the New Living Translation not only perpetuates the deception that Shaul was inspired by God, they published a text that they knew was not accurate.
For we are each responsible for our own conduct.
There is no possible way the Greek scholars responsible for translating Galatians actually thought that fortune, burden, meant responsible, or that bastazo, carry, meant conduct. This is fraud, a knowing and willful deception perpetrated for money. It is criminal. Now that the first paragraph of the sixth chapter is complete, let's review what Shaul has said thus far.
And also, brothers, if a man may have previously detected or caught someone in a false step, you all, the spiritual ones, you must thoroughly prepare and completely restore the one such as this with a meek and gentle spirit, carefully observing yourself so then you, yourself, may submit and be tempted, having tried to catch a mistake. Galatians 6 verse 1, of one another, the weighty burdens you carry, remove, and endure, and this in this way you all supply and complete the Torah of the Christu. Galatians 6 verse 2, indeed if someone supposes and presumes to be somebody, he is nothing. He deceives himself. Galatians 6 verse 3, but the work, performances, and accomplishments of himself, he must examine and prove meritorious, and then to himself, alone, at the exclusion of all others, the boast and brag, the justification for pride and praise, the exaltation and glory that person will possess and experience, and not for any other. Galatians 6 verse 4, for each and every one their own individual and distinct burden will carry and bear. Galatians 6 verse 5, end of part 1.